Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 157 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and yeah, sexual harassment. That's what we're going to be talking about today. And before we begin this really provocative show, just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because we love to receive your feedback. We sit around waiting to hear from you. Love it, love it. Okay. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Yeah, you know, today we're going to be talking about a really important topic. It's all things sexual harassment. Can't think of a better person to be addressing this issue than Dr. Kim Elsesser. Now, she is the author of a book, Sex and the Office, Women, Men, and the Sex Partition That's Dividing the Workplace. She's a lecturer at UCLA, where she teaches classes on psychology and gender. She has a blog on Forbes.com and is published in the New York Times. The Los Angeles Times and The Guardian has discussed this whole issue of gender issue on television on Fox News America Live with her and on radio at NPR's Talk of the Nation. Good Lord, she's all over the place. And here's the most important thing. She's now addressing probably one of the most important issues of the day, and that is this whole issue of men, women, and sexual harassment. Kim, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You know, it's been a little over 6 months since the hashtag MeToo movement began, with the sexual harassment allegations against Harvey Weinstein. And, you know, I'm also talking to you at a very interesting time, and that is just today. Bill Cosby, on retrial, was found guilty. Oh, boy, there's so much going on here. So what's gone on in these last 6 months? Where are we today with all of this?
Well, we started a dialogue, which is really, really good. People are talking more about sexual harassment. There's increased awareness of sexual harassment issues in the workplace, which is also really good. We don't have a lot to show for it. We haven't done very much to change things. And there's also some evidence that men may be more reluctant to interact with women at work since the whole Me Too thing started 6 months ago. And, you know, that's not a good thing. Women need to be able to interact with men at work, and men need to be able to interact with women at work.
Well, you know, here you have this whole issue of women, men, and this sex partition that's playing with the workplace. Yeah, I was just talking to a colleague the other day, and she is really kind of freaked out a lot because she's not sure now what to do. In the past, she was able to have dinner or lunch with a male colleague where they could really get into a lot of very important issues as it relates to the workplace, very much like guys do with guys. Now she doesn't know what to do, and quite frankly, neither does he. So when you wrote this book, what were your thoughts on this whole challenge now?
Yeah, I mean, the sex partition is what I call the kind of invisible barrier that exists between men and women at work, so that it makes it harder for men and women to go out to lunch or dinner or drinks than it would be if you were going out with somebody of the same sex. And, you know, it is harder because people are afraid that their friendliness, especially in this heightened awareness environment, that their friendliness will be misinterpreted as romantic interest or sexual harassment, or they're afraid of even giving the appearance of impropriety to their coworkers. But we have to remember that sticking with same-sex coworkers is not the answer. Just going out with men and women sticking with women is not the answer. Men and women do have to work together. And if you stick with the same sex and only have meetings and lunches and dinners with same-sex employees, that's actually discrimination, and that's illegal too. And so we have to make sure that people understand that, and they need to do all those things with both sexes.
Well, you know, this is tricky. You know, you're saying right now, you know, we can't really go there, right? At the same time, you know, you've got men who could be excellent mentors for women, say in startups and, you know, in corporate America, you know, men who are currently partners, women coming through the system, no matter what kind of organization it is, et cetera. But in order to mentor, you got to spend a lot of time with that person. Is this interfering with that mentorship as well?
Yeah, there's evidence. Sheryl Sandberg's leanin.org found that about a third of male managers say they're uncomfortable participating in work activities with women, including working alone and mentoring women. And, you know, men still run most of our corporations, so women need to be able to meet alone with men and, you know, develop those mentoring relationships if they're going to advance their careers. So it's a really important issue. There are things that organizations can do to help. For example, you know, setting up formal mentoring programs where senior managers are forced to mentor more junior employees. That helps because it decreases suspicion. If you're told you have to mentor this person, then everybody knows why you're meeting alone, and it's a less suspicious or uncomfortable situation.
You know, it's funny, as I'm thinking about this, I think that when I came through, you know, the medical system, for instance, there were very few women, right? So I didn't really have much of a choice. You know, it was a male mentor or wasn't. Now I, you know, you flash forward, where are you now? I'm just thinking, for instance, at the Salk Institute, I don't know if you just read in the news, there is a major researcher, a senior investigator who's a tenured faculty, I believe, at the Salk Institute of Research in San Diego. And he has been placed on some kind of suspension from his research because there has been a lot of complaint about the fact that he is not allowing female researchers and scientists to be promoted, move forward, that he actually puts impediments in their way, and that he interferes with relationships there in a negative way, which is clearly showing, you know, harassment and bias. So you've got that going on, which is a big mess. At the same time, you know, it's interesting. There's another phenomenon. I'm sure you've heard of a new group called The Wing. And this is an all-women's club that I believe began in New York, and is actually going to be coming to Washington, D.C. and other places. And this is an only women, all women, for networking, for getting together and doing their thing and back and forth. And you've got that now going on, which is quite fascinating. What do you think of a concept like that?
I mean, any opportunities for women to network are great. And I am a little skeptical about women-only groups like that because I think the biggest issue that women have is networking with men that run, you know, the organizations. And so segregating women into their own groups, I think it kind of perpetuates stereotypes, too, about women a little bit. Again, you know, any and all connections and networks are really valuable. So I don't discourage women from joining those. I just think in addition to those, we have to remember that we can't just segregate ourselves. We can't be like, okay, you know, the men aren't helping us, so we're just going to do this ourselves, because that is not the long-term solution. We really do need to have men and women to be able to work together in the workplace.
But how? You know, for instance, when you're encountering a guy who, you know, clearly would be superb to, you know, collaborate with, mentor with, whatever, but you're feeling a little hesitation and pushback and maybe even some kind of an indication that he doesn't really know what to do because in this current climate, whatever he does may be perceived incorrectly. How does that conversation then go? Does the woman initiate it saying what? Or how does the woman, you know, perhaps take some proactive and preemptive action to be able to reduce the amount of, I don't know, awkwardness of pushback just in general?
Yeah.
So what do you recommend?
I mean, there are definitely things the woman can do. First, I'd just like to say, too, to the man who is concerned, and I think a lot of men are in this boat where they're not sure how to react and they're nervous about one-on-one meetings and things like that. If you're nervous about those things, you're probably not somebody who's going to inadvertently sexually harass. Like, it's pretty hard to inadvertently sexually harass somebody. When we look at what Weinstein did, what he was charged with, who kind of got this whole thing started, you know, he didn't make an offhand remark at a meeting. He asked people to watch him in the shower or shower with him or whatever it was. And, you know, looking, you just brought up Bill Cosby. Like, those are not things you do accidentally. And so men need to remember that most men are not sexual harassers. And, you know, they don't have to worry about inadvertently doing something wrong because most men are not going to do something wrong. But back to what the woman can do, there are things you can do if you want to approach someone. And one of the things that I recommend to people is to be very specific about why you want to meet with this person, why you want this person to be your mentor. So if you just go up to them and say, hey, can we meet sometime? That's a little, you know, they're thinking, why does she want to meet with me? You know, they get nervous or whatever. But if you say, you know, I really want to expand my client list and I really want to hear how you compiled one of the largest client lists in the firm, or, you know, I'm having trouble with the Jones account and I hear, you know, you're the expert on Mr. Jones or whatever. You know, you have some very specific reason why you want this person to guide you and be your mentor. Then that may relax them and make them understand that you're interested in business, not some kind of romantic involvement.
You know, I really feel that is extremely important. So women out there, listen up, be specific. And also, I don't know how you feel about this, Kim, but I always have a paper trail. So, you know, thanks so much for speaking with me today, Joe. Specifically, I would like to work with you on the following elements of this very challenging project. And the schedule of meetings with you would include, and the deliverables would be blah, blah. And so that anyone who reads that knows exactly what you're doing here. And that you have a way, I think, maybe, I don't know, you tell me, of alleviating some of this paranoia on the part of the guy when he sees it's all bang, 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 you know, deliverables, discussions that are specific, themes that have to be, you know, addressed, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think of that?
Exactly. I think that's a great idea. The more specific you can be, the better, because then, again, the person realizes exactly what the meeting is all about. Another thing that I recommend is to not just explain that to the person you're meeting with, but a lot of times it's the other employees in the office that get a little suspicious. They think, oh, like Joe and Mary have been meeting alone an awful lot lately. Like, what, you know, what's going on there? And that's what makes, you know, both people nervous. Mary and Joe become nervous because the office gossip starts. So you don't only want to send that memo, you know, to the person you're meeting with, but tell your fellow employees, like, oh, you know, Joe's really been helping me out with this particular account, or, you know, these are the things I've been meeting with him about. And that also puts the kibosh on the office gossip, which can really help as well.
Huh. Okay. So in other words, really make it public. You know,
yeah.
Make certain none of this ever goes covert. Otherwise, people, you know, will make their own assumptions. So basically nip it in the bud by saying out front, in front of your own team or, you know, whomever and however you deal with it at work, just say, you know, Joe's been invaluable. I don't know what I do without him, you know, because this one account was just murder. But I really feel like I've solved it now. And, you know, I think that other people, you know, should really look at Joe as a great resource on this. So you're sharing him at the same time you're giving him kudos and you're showing that you got a positive result out of this. So what can organizations themselves do to help prevent harassment and to make it easier for men and women to connect at work? I mean, how can you perhaps have some impact on, you know, your own workplace organization and any of these issues?
Yeah, I think there are several things that organizations can do. Organizations spend a lot of time telling employees what not to do at work, about how they should not be things they should not do when they interact with the opposite sex. And they do an okay job at that. They don't even do a great job at that, I don't think, but they spend a lot of time on that. Very few organizations teach employees how to actually interact with the opposite sex. And, you know, I think that's a good place to start. There are, for example, about half of employees have been involved romantically with a coworker at some point in their career.
Wait a minute, how many?
About half, research shows.
Good heavens, 50% of people have been involved with somebody at work. Wow.
So organizations don't talk about that. They kind of just sweep that under the rug and hope it doesn't happen. And that's not an effective strategy. We need to teach people how to get consent, how to do that professionally. It's going to happen. People, you know, meet each other at work. It's actually a very great place to meet people because, you know, people have similar interests and things like that. And so you have to teach people how to deal with that situation and how to do it professionally. For example, some organizations are now implementing a you can only ask once policy. So you can ask somebody out on a date, but you can only ask them once. So you can't go back in a week or a month or a year and ask again. You only get one shot at asking somebody on a date. So that's an example of a policy. But I mean, there are other ways to teach people how to interact with one another. We were just talking about formal mentoring programs. Those are great to bring employees together. And just sending the message that, you know, if you're having lunch with, you know, if you're a man and you're having lunch with male employees and you're having drinks with male employees and you're having one-on-one meetings with male employees, you need to be doing those things with female employees as well.
Huh. And so really going out of your way to be more inclusive
exactly.
And not to feel, you know, as though there has to be some kind of partition, as you said in the title of your book, between men and women, because I don't see that getting us anywhere. You know, it's interesting. Kim, do you think this is a generational issue? Go now to your Gen Zs. These are your 20-year-olds now. And then your millennials. And into that whole quadrant, right, up to about age 40. Do you think they're dealing with this differently?
They do deal with it differently, but it'll be interesting to see as they get older how that might change. Right now, like the 20-somethings, when they go out for drinks after work or go out to dinner or whatever, they go out in a giant group. So there's less of a barrier. Anybody who wants to come can come. You know, there's no question about, like, why are these two people going for drinks alone or whatever. As you get more senior, you know, the one-on-one meetings or the drinks, like when you need to have to talk with someone about something, become more important. And so I don't know if it's something that as they age, you know, will they have the sex partition? I don't know. But they do seem to have less of it now, again, because they do go out in groups and, you know, they're just coming out of university where there's less barriers and things like that as well.
I'm just wondering, you know, just doing some math here, Kim, by the time they need someone like that, let's say a 25-year-old 10 years from now, the person who would be their boss, one would think, would have been someone, you know, who may be more enlightened. If you do the age math, because I think that a lot of people who, you know, are currently 50 plus, certainly 60 plus, kind of came from a very different environment. They had to slug it through a system, and, you know, where there was a culture complete with belief systems and behavior systems. And I think whether they knew it or not, they were all kind of complicit in kind of making a mess of the whole thing, one way or the other, either avoiding it or omitting it or unfortunately becoming, you know, someone who is actively abusing. But I'm just wondering if as these millennials and Gen Zers, you know, certainly the Gen Zs, you know, move forward, that their bosses are going to have come from a different era and a different culture. And maybe it'll be less of a big deal. Maybe it's more of a situation of people Harvey Weinstein's age. What do you think?
It certainly may be. And I don't know that I want to wait that long. Like, I feel like we need to do things. If what you're saying is true, then, you know, in 30 years, this won't be a problem because all those people will be out of the workforce that, you know, have all these issues. But that's a long time to wait. So I feel like we need to do things before then. But yeah, I mean, it is possible that this younger generation will grow up with different attitudes. And, you know, we can certainly hope for that. And there is some signs that they do have, you know, I would call better attitudes about working with the opposite sex.
Okay.
We can certainly be hopeful about that.
And one last thing here, which is important, because I just love this whole topic. It's extremely important. Clearly, we don't want to wait 30 years. I mean, this is why your book is so timely and your work is so spot on, because I think everyone out there at the organizational level, men and women, need to really be taking a moment now, hitting the pause button and saying, whoa, you know, how do I now begin to deal with all of this? But you know, as you're looking at this whole issue, and thinking about, you know, how the culture has sort of, you know, the workplace culture has sort of supported a lot of this. What would you recommend? What if you do become sexually harassed? What if someone is like breaking that rule and stalking you on a daily basis or doing whatever? What should someone do?
Yeah, I mean, the good news about the Me Too movement is, again, you know, the increased awareness of those kind of issues. And I think organizations are much less likely to sweep that under the rug, you know, these days, even as compared to 6 months ago. So don't let it continue. You know, talk to someone, talk to your human resources person, talk to that person's boss, talk to whoever you're comfortable talking to, but don't let that go on. And again, I would hope now human resources would be much more sensitive to that issue than they would have been even 6 months ago. So there's no reason for people to suffer from harassment at work and to go to a workplace where they have to deal with that.
One last question that is interesting, right? In all of your research that you've done and back and forth, do you think it the level of sexual harassment increases as the job title represents that of someone in a more blue-collar job versus a white-collar job?
So you're suggesting that it would be greater in a blue-collar job than in a white-collar job? Or
yep.
Which way are you suggesting?
Yep.
That's a very interesting question. I haven't seen research that separates that. I don't know. I think sexual harassment is about power. And so in any situation, white-collar or blue-collar, where somebody has power, they can sexually harass. And so I don't know that in blue-collar jobs that would be more likely than in white-collar jobs. Certainly, all the situations we saw 6 months ago were high-profile, you know, Hollywood types. But, you know, this goes on in workplaces all over in all different kinds of workplaces. So I wouldn't say it's specific to even one type of profession. It happens in all different types of professions. And the one.
Yeah. And I was just bringing that up because of, of economic power. Touch points of economic power. And you brought it up beautifully. It's the issue of power. It's a power issue. How powerful do you feel when you're not making that much money anyway? And versus someone who's making a lot of money in corporate America, but who's becoming, you know, harassed. It's an interesting little nuance on this that I've been sort of noodling with. And I really look forward to some very good research in that, because I think there may be a divide. I'm just throwing it out there. I'm tickling the interest of researchers out there, but just a little something for everybody. You know, this has just been fabulous. We've been talking to Dr. Kim Elsesser, lecturer at UCLA and the author of Sex and the Office, Women, Men, and the Sex Partition That's Dividing the Workplace. And her website is forbes.com/site/KIM. That's Kim Elsesser, Elsesser. If you want to read more of her blogs on Forbes and learn more about the book itself, this has just been fabulous. Do you have one last little nugget that you could share with our audience out there, Kim?
You know, again, I think it's really great that we started this dialogue and everybody was talking about Me Too and sexual harassment, and we can't just let this fall to the wayside. We need to, you know, grab the momentum and really make some change in the workplace. And so I hope that organizations out there really start to implement some of these changes so that men and women can work together without harassment and without fear of harassment charges.
And your book is going to help be a very valuable resource to men and women who need to understand how to navigate these wild and crazy times. Thank you so much, Dr. Kim Elsesser. And I want everyone out there to just take a moment right now and hit iTunes, rate and review this show, because we want to hear your feedback. This was a really rich show, highly compelling, and certainly timely. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.